Good morning, and welcome to the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy's live weekly broadcast. I'm Roberta Oster, the Communications Director. Our program brings you insight and perspective from policy and faith leaders, experts, legislators, and community leaders. During these difficult times dealing with COVID-19 and racial justice, our broadcast focuses on economic, racial, social, and environmental issues here in Virginia. We will also share resources and opportunities for you to get involved in our work, advancing social justice and helping our neighbors. We keep you up to date, and we keep our elected officials accountable. Today, we will address the key issues that the Virginia Interfaith Center is advocating for the upcoming 2021 General Assembly. And I am pleased to introduce our guests. They are all staffers at the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. First, Jeanette Limon Amato. Jeanette is our immigrant justice organizer. Welcome, Jeanette. Our next guest is Reverend Jamar Boyd, and he is our economic justice organizer. Welcome, Jamar. And Reverend Dr. Lakeisha Cook, who is our justice reform organizer. And welcome, Lakeisha, and all of you. And now to our moderator is Benjamin Hoyne, who is the policy and campaigns director for the Virginia Interfaith Center. Ben?
Thank you, Roberta. Welcome to everyone watching. And welcome to our esteemed panel of guests. As you heard, we've got reverends, we've got doctors. I'm going to take the liberty of using first names, so I hope you'll indulge me with that. So we're really going to be talking today about kind of three of the legislative priority areas for the Virginia Interfaith Center for the upcoming 2021 General Assembly. Before we dig into that, I'll just take a minute or two to kind of broadly talk about the logistics, really, of the General Assembly for January, this coming January, so that we know what to expect. For those at home that were following the special session that recently concluded, it will be really similar to that we expected, which means it'll be primarily virtual, at least for those of us that are not elected officials. The House of Delegates will be meeting almost exclusively virtually, whereas the Senate will actually be in person once again at the Science Museum of Virginia. At least that's what we expect, although advocates like ourselves will not be allowed access to the building. So access for us and for you watching at home will be primarily through virtual means, Zoom and whatnot. We do expect the General Assembly to start on January 13th. That's the second Wednesday in January. This is what's known as an off-year session or a short session, as in Virginia. You know, for our state offices, we have elections on odd years. And so there was no, Virginia state senators, House of Delegates, what have you, on the ballot that we all just cast a few weeks ago. And so what that means is we had our long session, kind of the first session after an election this past January. And you might remember that there was a whole bunch of reforms that were made, including many of those led by and partnered and worked on by the Interfaith Center, whether that was on wage theft, on driving privilege cards, on environmental justice, and so many other issue areas. But for this upcoming short session, we actually expect it to be even shorter than historically. The Constitution mandates only requires a 30-day session in these off years. For about the past 30 years or so, traditionally, it's actually been increased to a 45-day session, which is allowed if two-thirds of folks agree upon that. We are hearing that there's folks, probably about almost half the members of the General Assembly, don't want to do a 45-day session, largely due to the special session, the 84-day special session that we just came out of, and some other reasons. And so it sounds like we're going to have a 30-day special session rather than 45, as we've had over the last few decades, unless something changes. And a 30-day session will be very quick. We have a crossover that we'll have to get to in about 15 days or so, which means every bill will have to work its way through one chamber in just 2 weeks, which was incredibly fast, and then get over to the other chamber to work its way through in those other 2 weeks before that then would go on to the governor after those 30 days. So I wanted to set that up with you all at home to let you know it's going to be a really quick session. It'll be primarily virtual. So let's dig into the issues. As Roberta introduced Jeanette first, I will try to follow that order. Jeanette, can you talk about the immigrant justice work that you're doing on behalf of the Interfaith Center and what some of the legislative priorities are for you and the immigrant community coming up here in January?
Yes, thank you, Ben. Well, as Ben and Roberta mentioned, I am the immigration justice organizer. So this session, I will be focusing on, building and creating a movement behind farm workers and protecting farm workers. We know farm workers' rights is not just an immigration issue nor a Latinx issue, but also a Black issue and a lot of intersectionality in within there, right? For us, for BACCP, we will be focusing on three major things. The first one is removing the exemption for the minimum wage. So that means, as y'all know, back in March, the General Assembly was raised the minimum wage. Well, unfortunately, they exempt farm workers. And as COVID has shown us, the farm workers are one of the most essential workers that have provided for us, that keep providing for food supply chain. So we want to make sure they have livable wages, right? Second is making sure that children under the age of 18 are not working indirectly or directly in tobacco fields in Virginia. And I say this because under federal law, there is a loophole, and it actually is perfectly legal for children to work in tobacco fields. So we want to make sure that we want to make sure the children have the parental consent from a legal guardian or grandparent in order for them to know that they're actually being exposed to a lot of health risks, right? And the last one is addressing heat stress. Just like farm workers, they have they experience long hours in the heat and have they're prominent to dying from a heat stroke, right? And this also affects construction workers, landscapers. But what's great about this bill is that it will actually protect indoor and outdoor workers. So those are my top three legislations that I will be working on. And of course, we'll be supporting in legislation through our partners like SCR.
Right. And just to reiterate, it sounds like that farm workers, essential workers who have been feeding us for centuries and feeding us during this pandemic, while so many of us are sheltering in place practically at home and using our privilege to try to avoid the virus. Farm workers have been out in the fields, exposing themselves to the virus potentially and to other dangers in their job. And yet what you're saying, if I'm understanding, Jeanette, is not only are they not being paid minimum wage right now, but they're not eligible for the minimum wage increases that Virginia passed and will go into effect in May of next year. Is that right?
Yeah, well, they're getting paid minimum wage under the federal law, but will not be included within the state law of Virginia. Yes.
Right. And the federal law, for folks watching at home and getting off the top of my head here, but I think it's something like if your business has a revenue threshold, and I want to say if it's $500,000 a year if your farm makes less than $500,000 a year or something along those lines, then you're not subject to the federal law. So for small farms that are just producing a few hundred thousand dollars a year in revenue, they can actually pay folks $3, $4, $5 an hour. And I think we've heard stories of farm workers that are indeed getting paid those type of hourly rates. So
yes, correct. And that that is because they're getting paid by how much they produce or harvest in buckets or, you know, any buckets or bags. And so that's how they're able to get paid less.
Right. Correct. What do you expect kind of the legislative process to be for these bills? We have patrons, you know, the committee assignments you expect them to go to. Can you walk folks through that a little bit?
Yes. Some of the bills, the tobacco and children, they already have a House patron, which is Delegate Alfonso Lopez. He has been pushing this legislation since three years, and he has been watering down the bill just because it's unable to pass. You know, it's unable to pass, and it always dies in appropriations. So we want to make sure that as people of good faith and will, we are, you know, putting it out there in people's head and making sure they're already, they have like a little spark into advocating for this, right? And so for the heat stress, last session we had Delegate Word and Senator Hashmi. We have yet to confirm that. So we will have that information up in our website as soon as possible. And then for removing the minimum wage, we had Delegate Guzman. Am I running blank? But
I think it was just her in the House.
Yeah, that's sorry. So Delegate Guzman, and we have yet to find a senator. But as like I said, we will have that information up and running. A lot of these bills that we are working on, we're working with coalition partners, and we want to make sure that, you know, we're all working as a team and we have an agreement onto who will be representing us and fighting for us at the GA. And so when it comes to the process and how the bills run into committees, you know, all of these bills have some type of agriculture or natural resources. So they all get referred to the Committee on Agriculture. And then if it passes, it gets referred to the Labor and Commerce. And then sometimes in Labor and Commerce, it doesn't pass, and they send it to appropriations, which appropriation means is basically dead, you know. It's so that's what we have seen in the past sessions. We're hoping that, you know, this time we have more support from the public and more education. So yeah.
Great. And what can folks watching at home, what can they do to help?
Yeah, of course. So first, the Virginia Interfaith and Legal Aid Justice is having a Farm Workers 101 in December 4 at 12. Information is up in our page if you want to sign up and, you know, get to get folks and learn more about farm workers. Sign our petition as well. Our petition up is in our website, and I'll drop it in the comments. And then if you or your congregation wants to host a Farm Workers 101, you can send me an email, or if you all want to meet with your legislators about this issue, you can also show me an email and we can coordinate meetings.
Great. And so folks can get in touch with you, and certainly that information is available on our website. I encourage people to sign up for our email list. I think this week we featured farm workers in our weekly roundup. Yes. And as you can see on the screen right now, there's a Thanksgiving litany that folks can also read, you know, in honor of their meal a week from today. So great. Well, I want to turn, thank you so much, Jeanette. I want to turn to Jamar here, our newest staff member at the Interfaith Center, I think the first time on this show. So welcome, Jamar, to you and to the broader interfaith community. Economic justice organizer, can you talk about, you know, what you're organizing for, what your top legislative priority is for January?
Yeah, so our top legislative priority for 2021 is paid sick day standard in Virginia. We made a considerable effort last General Assembly, and we're doing it once again. So right now, we're strategizing and organizing with our chapters, as well as placing an intense focus on congregations and trying to gain some youth and college engagement around what we believe to be a common cause issue in Virginia.
Wonderful. And why is this legislation necessary? What problem are we trying to solve?
Yeah, so right now, Virginia does not have a standard for paid sick days. So for full-time employees, as well as part-time employees, there is no guarantee that when you are sick or battling an illness or your child is sick, that you can actually take 2 to 3 days off without penalty and with pay. We've noticed that even within the partisan lines of Democrats and Republicans, there is overwhelming support for a paid sick day standard. So what we're looking at is to establish 5 paid sick days for all employees across the state of Virginia, full-time employees, and also making an effort for part-time employees to have at least 3 to 4, possibly less, with whatever considerable concessions, but not a watered-down piece of legislation that omits them from being considered. Within the statistics, that is, there is about 84% of Virginia Democrats, at least in the polling that we did, that support this, and somewhere between 72 and 74%, give or take, of Republicans. So it's overwhelmingly 80 to 82% of the entire state that would support a paid sick day standard in the state of Virginia.
Right. And I think I've seen articles and other things. Obviously, we're in the midst of a pandemic, where people often are being encouraged to stay home or to quarantine or isolate themselves. And I've seen articles where some folks they don't want to get a test. They don't want to get a COVID test because they're concerned if they're positive, then they won't be able to work and then won't be able to provide for their family. Have you seen instances where people are forced to choose between kind of protecting the health of their coworkers and society at large or providing for their family?
Yes, and I think especially when you're looking at our first responders, our food service industry workers and employees, they are the most vulnerable to this virus and to the pandemic, not just from a health perspective, but economically as well. So when you're looking at waitresses and waiters, when you're looking at teachers, when you're looking at, again, first responders, our nurses, our doctors, et cetera, there is an extreme risk, especially when you are unable financially to put your child in daycare and or just take off of work for 2 to 3 days, even when you're ill. And then, as you've mentioned, there are op-eds. Renee Robinson wrote a tremendous op-ed recently stating the need for paid sick days, because while it not only protects the worker, it shows that there is a considerable concern by their employer for their welfare, and it boosts employee morale. And so I think that's the other part of this as well. As you, this is an economic justice issue, it's a human rights issue, but it's also, from the business owner's perspective, shows great concern and uplifts the morale of your employees when they know that you care, not just for their production, but for their welfare as well.
Great. And how can folks watching from home, how can they get involved? How can they help?
Yeah, so they can reach out to me here at the Virginia Interfaith Center. We are working diligently to schedule virtual town halls and meetings with senators and delegates. If they are interested in their congregation doing that, they can also reach out as well. And then we have clergy sign-on letters within a few districts in the Northern Virginia area as we try to push the pressure constituently onto these legislators to consider this necessary legislation for 2021.
Right, and it looks like your email is on the chat right now, or on the show, I should say. And additionally, there's a website, vapaidsickdays.org, that has a whole host of information fact sheets and data and stories and all sorts of stuff that I think is a wealth of information specifically for this legislative initiative. So great. Well, thanks, Jamar. I appreciate all your work on that. Now I want to turn to Lakeisha Cook, who is not as new as Jamar, and actually I think was on the show a week or two ago and did a wonderful job. So great to have you back. And you're working on justice reform. Can you talk about top legislative priority in your area?
Thanks so much, Ben. Our top priority going into January is going to be abolition of the death penalty here in the state of Virginia. It is beyond time for us to abolish the death penalty here in our state. And so we're excited and feeling very hopeful that this will be the year that we will be successful.
And why is it necessary to abolish the death penalty in Virginia?
Well, it's necessary for a lot of reasons. We know that it is a moral issue. We believe in human dignity. We believe in redemption. It is a racial justice issue. The African-American community has been disproportionately impacted by the death penalty over the years. We have a horrible history of capital punishment here in our state. Virginia was the first state in our country to ever have an execution back in 1608. Since that time, we have executed close to 1,400 people. That's a lot of people losing their lives. It has been 10 years since we've had an execution here in Virginia. So I believe it's beyond time for us to go ahead and get that law taken off of the books. I think it's extremely relevant even today to have this conversation, because many people may know that there is someone scheduled to be executed in Indiana today who has been on federal death row for quite a while. And he is scheduled to lose his life today. His name is Orlando Hall. He was convicted by an all-white jury. He was prosecuted by an attorney that was trained to keep people of color off of juries. He is the eighth person to be executed off of federal death row this year. And he was convicted back in the 90s. And so there hadn't been a federal execution in years. But now under the current administration, the executions have started again. So we don't want to see that happen in Virginia. We haven't executed in 10 years. And so let's go ahead and get this law. Let's get it abolished and off the books so that we don't execute anyone ever again.
And it's disappointing that those have started up again. I think we've seen, you know, over the past several years, the need for our Commonwealth to pass its own laws, whether that's raising the minimum wage, whether that's allowing access to driving privileges for immigrants and on down the list. Because, you know, regardless of what party is in power in Washington, D.C., our Commonwealth needs to be able to make sure that we listen to the will of the voters and the residents of Virginia. So, and as you mentioned, we have a over 400 year history of executing people in the Commonwealth here. So what do you expect kind of the legislative path to be for a bill to abolish the death penalty?
Well, right now, just to kind of speak about the patrons we have for the bill, we do have a patron on the Senate side, Scott Saraville, and we're very excited to have him as our patron. And Senator Stanley will be a co-sponsor for the bill. We're still working on a House sponsor, but once the bill gets in process, we believe that it will first go to, in the House side, the Criminal Subcommittee, and the chairperson is Delegate Mullen. And then after it goes from the subcommittee, it'll go back to full courts and justice, where the majority leader Herring is the chair. And then after there, if they determine there's a fiscal impact for this particular bill, then it will go to House Appropriations. And the chairperson there is Delegate Torian. Then on the Senate side, it will first go to the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is chaired by Senator Edwards. And then from there, again, if they believe that there's a fiscal impact for this particular bill, then it will go to the Appropriations Committee.
Wow. And all that has to happen in 30 days.
All that has to happen in 30 days. And if you don't mind, Ben, I saw someone just pop a question up. Can I answer?
Sure.
Okay, so Adam asks, are there any inmates currently scheduled to be executed in Virginia? There are two people who are currently on death row here in Virginia, two African-American men. And so they are awaiting decisions. You know, that some of them, I believe one of them has an appeal in place at this point. So we're hoping that they will not be executed. But hopefully if we can abolish this bill, it will impact them also and they will no longer be on death row.
Great. And how can folks watching at home, how can they get involved? How can they be helpful?
Well, there's a ton of information on our website. So we encourage you to go to our website. We encourage you to sign up for our newsletter. That's where you get a ton of information. They can also email their legislator. If you email me, I'll be able to give you a template. All you have to do is plug your information in and you can change some of the words if you want to, but you can send your legislator an email and tell them that you want them to vote to abolish the death penalty here in our state. We also have a clergy sign-on letter. We have been working diligently over the last couple of weeks, trying to get faith leaders all throughout our state to sign on to the support letter saying that they stand in support with us to abolishing the death penalty. That link is also on our website. We also encourage you all, we have, I don't know if it's okay to plug this, but we have Day for All People, which is coming up. And so that would be a great opportunity for anybody who wants to learn more about the policies that we're prioritizing going into January. We'll have workshops. There'll be a workshop on death penalty, workshop on farm workers, workshop on paid sick days. And so just a ton of workshops, tons of information. And we're also going to be hosting prayer vigils at our lynching sites throughout the state, along with a prayer vigil at the old execution site, which is at Virginia State Penitentiary, the old former penitentiary that's off Belvedere. So tons of ways that you can get involved, and we need everyone's help so that we can get this this awful policy off the books.
Right, and for folks watching, the Day for All People, which we historically hold just after MLK Day in January in person in Richmond, obviously we won't be doing an in-person advocacy day this coming session, but we will actually, as Lakeisha mentioned, have a Days for All People, the week of MLK holiday. So that week in January, virtual programs online. You can go to our website, virginiainterfaithcenter.org, right now and register. I believe all the folks on the screen here will be involved in workshops in some capacity. And as Lakeisha mentioned, on that Friday, I think it's January 22nd, we will have an outdoor of prayer vigils. This will be in accordance with the governor's regulations, everyone wearing a mask, socially distant, whatnot. And there'll be a few of them around the state, around the Commonwealth, or if you just want to do an independent one by yourself with your spouse or loved ones, we'll have a program that you could go do one, at a site near you. So you don't have to come to one of the few that we're putting together. Excellent. Well, I did want to open up for questions that we might have online. I've seen a couple pop up, one which we didn't get to. And if there's others, please, folks, go ahead and put them on the screen. If the death penalty is abolished through legislation, what happens for inmates on death row in Virginia right now?
You want me to take that, Ben?
Please, Lakeisha.
They will actually continue to serve out their sentence. It will be a life sentence in prison. So I hope that answers that question.
Great. I think I saw something on farm workers that was asking where the farm workers are located in Virginia or something along those lines. There we go. Where do most farm worker communities reside? Jeanette, you want to take that one?
Yes. So farm workers are mostly located in Eastern Shore, but as well as Charlottesville, where they do a lot of apple picking. In the South Side and Central and Shenandoah Valley as well, with the potatoes. And tobacco fields.
Yeah, tobacco on the South Side, as you mentioned, apple and other things in Charlottesville and the Shenandoah Valley, and then Eastern Shore certainly has a good bit as well. Someone's asking about a prayer litany for Thanksgiving for farm workers. Jeanette, can you take that one?
Yeah, so, and I forgot to mention this, but we do have a Thanksgiving litany for those who would like to honor and, you know, pray for farm workers. It is up in our website as well. That is just mostly to honor and pray for the protection. And so hopefully if anyone's interested, you know, it's up in our website.
Great. Something about, there we go. Is there a toolkit for advocates against the death penalty? Organizing tips, fact sheets for congregations, books for study groups, Lakeisha?
There is a ton of information that's on our website, including a fact sheet that congregations can print out and give to their members, especially those who want to meet with their legislator. It is a very easy to read document. It gives you some points that you can hit regarding death penalty, regarding it being racially biased, an expensive public policy, not a deterrent to crime. So that information is found on our website.
Great. Unless there's other questions from coming in, I know we're right at 30 minutes. We got a thank you from Heidi. Thanks, Heidi, for checking us out. Appreciate it. But with that, I want to probably sign off. And again, thank you to Jeanette and Jamar and Lakeisha for joining us today. Thank you for all your hard work on fighting for justice in the Commonwealth here. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to everyone that's watching from remotely, virtually, to joining us online, whether it's at a Farm Worker 101 or Days for All People, or in your home with a Thanksgiving litany, or advocating with your legislator for paid sick days, or the many, many other things that you can do in the fight for justice. And we look forward to continuing that fight, and certainly hope to see you in person at some point in 2021. Hopefully a year from now, we'll be doing these in person. We can't wait to get on the road and see everybody once it's safe. So I hope everyone has a safe and blessed and socially distant holiday next week. And we'll see you in December. So thanks very much.